Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom of four young kids. I'm figuring this out as I go, but I'm here to talk to Bonnie, who has been writing and speaking on the subject for over a decade and has been homeschooling for three decades.
My name's Bonnie Landry. I've got seven kids. They're ages 13 to 33. I've been homeschooling for 29 years. I'm a wife, a mom, a grandma. I'm a speaker and a writer, and I'm an advocate of joy. So we're here to provide this podcast so that homeschooling can look like you imagined it to be. Okay, so I understand you have a few questions.
We did yes.
not interview today. We have some questions. Actually,
yes.
lots, yeah.
Right, and they don't necessarily flow as I usually do. They're kind of jumping around, which is okay.
That's okay, yeah.
We're catching up with people who've been waiting.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
All right, so the first question is from Ben, and he wants to know what are some of the best ways for a father to support the homeschooling process. And I think that could also apply to any parent who is outside of the home and not the, I guess, lead educator.
Yeah, that's kind of the primary homeschooler. Yeah. It's interesting because even if in my own circle of friends, you know, that our family has grown up with, that can really vary quite a lot, right? Mm-hmm. I think for most moms, just the fact that their husband is supporting the decisions that they make is going to go a huge long way, right? Mm-hmm. Some women, like myself, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew, you know, how I wanted this to go. Albert wasn't opposed to it. I think if he had been opposed to it or questioning me, that would have been really hard to take. Right? Now, I don't mind if he says, why are you doing that or whatever, but if he was, you know, criticizing or questioning me, my ability or something like that, that would feel really like I didn't have support at the absolute grassroots level, right? That, you know, with my husband. So somehow husbands, I think, probably are going to be a lot more involved in the decision-making. Mm-hmm. Albert wasn't, but he, you know, that suited both of us really well. Right. So, so that's kind of how it looks in our household. But where Albert's support comes in is, doing whatever it takes to make sure that education can be happy and joyful and efficacious. Right. Mm-hmm. So in my own household, that's kind of supporting me in my decision making. Certainly he's the financial support. You know, the way we homeschool isn't terribly expensive, but you know, I mean, if I did have to spend money on something, it was always something I was like, he was always really supportive. It was like, no, this is their education. You know, this is an important place to put our money. I know other families who the dad is much more involved in the day-to-day choosing of curriculum and choosing how this is going to go, and even some of the day-to-day teaching, right? Like the husband does math or the husband does science or whatever the wife feels sort of compromised or less able to do. Mm-hmm. The husband is willing and able to take on, you know, whatever this is to make this work, right? Whatever it is to make it work. But I would say overall, I think that the husband supporting the wife emotionally through whatever, you know, whatever involvement he has or wants to have or doesn't have, if he's there for her emotionally, that's how most of us, I'm saying wife just because most of the time it's the mom doing the homeschooling, and of course there are always exceptions to the rule, but if I knew I had Albert's emotional support, that's how I felt most supported, right? You know, regardless of whether or not we were deciding on what curriculum together, deciding on what money to spend or deciding how the household was going to run, you know, the emotional support of saying, you know, I need a break or, mm-hmm. This person, I'm having trouble disciplining this person. And can we talk about that? So I think the role of the dad can really look a lot of different ways. And I think that the only way we're really going to come to, well, okay, how can you help me best is by saying to your wife, how can I help you best? Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. You know, and because sometimes somebody could give support that's actually not that helpful, right? So they think that what they're doing is being supportive, but and it is supportive in nature, but it may not be what she needs or wants, right? Or what the family needs or wants, right? Dad doesn't always know because he's often gone, right? Of course, most of the dads are home now, but he's often gone. So what, in your own household, what does your husband's role look like?
Two things come to mind. First of all, actually this morning, I was kind of, I guess, bouncing ideas, kind of almost venting that I feel almost inadequate.
Right. Yeah.
Like we were just kind of discussing, I think we talked about this last week too, where it's not to compare to other homeschooling families or what kids are doing in schools. And I still struggle with that myself, you know, feeling like, most days I feel like we don't get to every subject that I plan, you know? Yeah. And so that's really hard. And so, not only you, but some of the other people we've had on the show have, you know, been saying, if you, you know, let's say you lose out on a year, that's not really going to do much.
Yeah.
And so even though I'm not setting out to try and skip a year or something, just kind of being kinder to myself anyway. So I kind of was talking with my husband about this, and he was kind of giving me feedback from his perspective. He was homeschooled, like with not rigid, but more, you know, scheduled curriculum based stuff. Right. I think they did Mother of Divine Grace.
Right.
So this whole thing that we're doing is new. So just being able to talk to him and have him understand, you know, where I'm coming from and how I'm feeling. And he was just there. He wasn't necessarily trying to fix everything, but just
to hear you.
Right. So that's kind of one thing that my husband really does well. The other thing is he kind of fills in areas that I don't even think of. Like the other day, we got this dictionary thesaurus that my parents had and never use.
Right.
And so my husband pulled it out during dinner and was teaching the kids how to look up things in a dictionary, because it's kind of unheard of now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And yeah, so, if you're given a dictionary and expected to know how to use it, we should know how to use resource materials. It's important.
Right. Right? Yeah. So he explained how to do it, and I was actually able to use it today. My six-year-old keeps asking me, like every day, I think for the last week, he's asked me, how cold does it have to be for you to get frostbite? What is frostbite? What happens if you get frostbite? I don't know where he learned of this, or if, you know, Tim or I said just something like those old sayings.
Yeah.
But I said, well, let's look it up in the dictionary. What is frostbite? And so we pulled out the dictionary, and he flipped the pages, and, you know, so anyway, my husband will fill in little gaps that I don't think to include.
Yeah. And I think I've said before in interviews, Albert was always, first of all, he was the current events guy, because he'd hear things on the news or whatever, or he'd be listening to like Catholic radio or something, and he would, you know, tell some great story of some, you know, miracle that happened, or some saint story that he listened to on the way home, right? And it's something that, you know, just sort of an extra layer of what he did. The other thing my husband did was sports, right? I am not a sports person at all, and so he handled all the, you know, sports type stuff that the kids did, you know, the gym nights and the, you know, we have homeschool basketball and things like that, or we used to in back in the olden days before COVID. And, you know, so I, you know, really grateful for that. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And being really active in our kids' lives in that way.
So
I think the bottom line can look so many different ways, but find out, you know, talk, so that, you know, your wife knows you're there to support her, and you knows that that she can, you know, as you're finding your way homeschooling too, you're going to maybe not realize in what areas you might need support, right? Like, you know, there was a period of time we went through where it just felt like going out and getting groceries was like this ordeal. And so I said to my husband, if I can just hand off the groceries to you for a while, you know, and it wasn't for very long. I don't remember, a few months or something, but it just made such a difference at that moment in my life to be able to say, please, can you do this for me?
Right. Yeah. And yeah. Well, on that note, my husband and I kind of switch off, because there's some times that I just want to get out of the house and I'll go grocery shop. And then there are other times where it's like, I do not want to leave. Can you do it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So sharing the load.
Yeah. So if that, if more questions spin off that, we can address them.
Yeah.
Should we go on to the next one?
Yes. Let's move on to this question. I don't know who sent it in, but the question is, have you dealt with people who disapprove of your approach to education in terms of homeschooling your children? How did you deal with it? And yeah, let's just start there.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this in the last podcast episode, but dealing with it more directly. Yeah, of course, you know, we were, you know, homeschooling way back when, so it was pretty unknown when we started in Canada, for sure. We're a few years behind the States in terms of the homeschool movement. And, you know, so the majority of people I knew had never heard of it. And most people, I would say, were either disapproving or skeptical. Right. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a lot of flack. And I think one of the reasons that I didn't was because I acted confident. So even, I mean, sometimes I felt confident, but when I didn't feel confident, I still acted confident. So it didn't give people a lot of room to move in terms of, like, I wasn't going to be sort of, I don't know, cornered, I guess, you know, because I think we can feel that way, that we have to defend our decision. Well, we don't ask anybody who has their kids in public school to defend that decision, right? Yeah. You know, so we're sort of automatically on the defensive, right? And they're on the offensive. And so that's not fair, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that the most important thing that we can do is just to ask people to, you know, I respect the decision you've made, and I would appreciate you respecting mine.
Yeah.
Right. And the conversation, just don't engage. Right. And if somebody, you know, if somebody's being, you know, pushy, if they honestly want to know, you know, okay, how does homeschooling work? I have some concerns about it. You know, we are free to say, hey, listen, I've got some really good thoughts on this. There's some really good research on it. I'd be happy to discuss it with you. I just don't want to defend my position. That's not fair. Right. You don't have to defend yours. So, you know, that's not a fair conversation. But if you want to just talk about it, yeah, for sure. But many of us are dealing with, have people in our lives who are overbearing, maybe, you know, and we can feel kind of bullied by them. And, you know, I mean, my family, absolutely, my husband's family and my family both just thought it was weird, right? And did not understand why on earth a person would do this. But they were also respectful, you know, that not that they never brought it up and they never expressed concerns, but they were respectful of our decision. And after a period of time, I'd been homeschooling for quite a while, like 8 or 9 years, when finally I sort of had this, actually my mom bought me a subscription to a homeschool magazine, and I thought, for my birthday, and I thought, oh, okay, she's accepted this fact. And that's a beautiful thing, right? What a lovely thing. Right. Somebody to come along like that took a long time. But, you know, so I think be confident and also, you know, set your boundaries, make them really clear. I am not going to be on the defensive here. You know, I don't feel any need to defend my position. You know, if you earnestly want to know about homeschooling, I can forward you some info on it, you know? Yeah. So I think we have to be very, just make our boundaries really clear, because otherwise they'll get to us. Right.
Yeah.
And if you have people in your life who are badgering you, right, and you can't extricate yourself from that, don't be around those people.
Right.
Right. Nobody needs that. You know, it's hard enough to raise a family, and it's just not necessary. And so, you know, make up a reason why you're not but you come up with a reason why you're, why you don't want to be around them. You know, like, oh, we're too busy. Right. And, you know, our lives aren't really, our timing doesn't really work out anymore, whatever, you know, just slowly, you know. And if it's family and you can't, you know, it's not a situation you can get out of easily, really, really limit your time. Right.
Yeah.
You know, go for short visits, go for, you know, and be really clear before we go. It's like, I'd love to come and visit you, but I don't want to be badgered about homeschooling. That's not
right.
Fair.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, then along those lines, how do you respond if you have gotten any disapproval from your approach from other homeschooling families, you know, like,
right,
based on what curriculum you choose or don't choose, you know, how do you deal with, I guess, the judgment from that?
Right. Yeah. Again, I think head held high is going to be a huge service. It's just be really confident. But also, I think developing a little bag full of things you can say, mm-hmm. That make you feel like you're not fumbling, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the reality is when you're sort of less curriculum oriented, more relationship oriented, you're not worried about what textbook they're going to get through in a year, what work they're going to get through in a year. If you sort of have some things that, okay, this is how I can respond to that question, then you don't feel unprepared, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I don't mean in a combative way, but just simply by saying, we use a Socratic method of education. And if somebody says, oh, what does that mean, right? You say, well, it's a very much a discussion-based format of education, and the children, you know, learn at their own pace. You know, we are or are not unschoolers, and, you know, you could describe what unschooling is or isn't. You know, you could say, okay, well, we lean towards kind of an unschooling non-curriculum approach. You know, we have routine every day. We make sure we cover our things every day. We don't necessarily use a textbook, right?
Yeah.
But if you have a few little short phrases, mm-hmm. then it's going to help you to feel like you're not fumbling and you didn't say something stupid. If you're not somebody who thinks well on the spot, mm-hmm. You can end up sort of feeling like, what do we do exactly? You know,
right.
And or come up, you know, whatever method you use, whatever, you can also come up with a phrase. You say, oh, well, we are Charlotte Mason homeschoolers, or we are Montessori, we have a Montessori approach, or, you know, whatever, like, just have a phrase. They may or may not know what it means, but at least you have something to say. It's not for their benefit, it's for yours, right?
Right.
So, time, something to bear in mind is that time always is on your side. So the more homes, you know, the more long you homeschool and people see that your kids are bright and engaged and want to know and love learning and all of that, that's huge. You know, when you're sidled up along a family who's maybe, you know, not that every family who uses curriculum is the kids aren't going to like learning, because that's not the case, mm-hmm. but it's can be the case, right? Mm-hmm. And so if they're heavily curriculum oriented and, you know, their kids are unhappy and they don't like to learn, and you're there as a juxtaposition to, you know, a different approach, you know, that speaks volumes, right? And the older your kids get, the more obvious that is.
Right.
Yeah.
So I've been reading St. Thomas More, the nonfiction book, to my kids. And what struck me is that anybody that visits the Moore household recognized how educated and happy the children are in the home.
Yeah.
And how, you know, Thomas Moore and his wife had fostered just this love of learning and just this love of each other. You know, it describes how Thomas Moore would come home and his kids would just be at his side. And that all the guests just, you know, thought this was so great and they felt so welcome in the home because of that. And I think that just kind of speaks to the answer to the question, you know, where it's just, you know, this is what we do and our kids are loving learning and they're happy and joyful. And
Yeah. I remember one time somebody came over to our house and we were just taking a break in the afternoon. I can't remember why she stopped by, but we were all having tea it was summertime. We were all having the tea on the deck, and my daughter plays harp, and my daughter was practicing her harp. Like, so we're all on the deck, we're all drinking tea, there's tablecloths and teacups and all that, and my daughter's playing the harp, and this friend of ours walked in and she goes, "This is so civilized," you know, but isn't it something we crave, you know, that we, you know, that there's kind of harmony, right?
Right.
And she caught us on a good day. There's not always harmony, but, you know, if harmony is your goal, that really changes the you know, how people look at your family and how people, you know, what your goals are, right?
Right.
You know, the movie based on the play about Thomas More?
Yes, Man for All Seasons.
Man for All Seasons, yeah. It's yeah, that's such a good show. We love it.
I love St. Thomas More. Actually, my son, my six-year-old, his middle name is Thomas, and so his patron saint is Thomas More.
Awesome. Yeah, so do you think, I can't remember the original question. Did that, do you think that answered the question?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So I'll move on to the next question. How do you transition from younger years to more independent work for older kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because I think often people can, they can kind of get, you know, what very hands-on learning looks like in the younger years. Right. But there, you know, as you look towards high school, you think, okay, well, you know, I don't think I could challenge them enough, or I think they might be bored, or I think they don't have enough direction, or whatever, you know, questions we have. And I would say that in my family, that happened very slowly. So that those transition years happened very slowly. And I'll just give you an example. I often don't introduce textbooks until they're in, until they start asking for them, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as kids get older and they start to become aware of kind of more what's out there, you know, they start thinking, oh, well, that looks interesting. Do you think I could do biology, or do you think I could do physical science, or whatever? You know, they start to kind of become more aware of what's out there, and then by nature start asking for those things. Most kids will start asking, oh, wow, this is a really interesting subject. Or you can see that maybe they're, you know, 11, 12, 13, and they suddenly are really interested in all things mechanical. Mm-hmm. And so you think, you know what, there's some curriculum that probably be really helpful for you, you know, because I can see that you want to go deeper, right? Mm-hmm. Or they love art. And so you think, okay, well, there's an art curriculum that covers history and technique and, you know, art appreciation and all of those things. So, you know, maybe it's time to sort of look at that. And, you know, often I would then get my kids to sort of actually just look at a book, borrow it from someone, or look at one of their older siblings' books, have a look through, see if this interests you. Or here's a catalog or a website of, you know, a curriculum company. What do you think? And so, you know, they transitioned into that very slowly, right? So that was, and very, a really wide age range. So my youngest daughter was asking for, you know, like a science book of her own by the time she was probably, I don't know, maybe 9 mm-hmm. or 10. And, you know, some of my kids, it was more like, you know, 14 or 15 that, you know, they were, and of course, you know, you're also looking at a different level. A 9-year-old isn't going to learn the same as a 15-year-old, right? So, right. You know, the kind of text you're choosing for them is going to be different. And so when your goal is to foster a love of learning, of course, then the idea of learning and going deeper into things is an attractive thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'll just give language art. I'll use the language arts as kind of an example of that slow transition, is that, you know, we would start off doing dictation, and, you know, they would do dictation for, you know, a number of years. And of course, dictation, you're starting very, very rudimentary, and you're getting, you know, more challenging as they get older, and you're covering more technical things and deeper literature, maybe. Mm-hmm. And at some point, independent writing is either asked for or suggested on my part. So say, mm-hmm. for example, some of my kids, by the time they're 10 or 9, they would be saying, you know, I'd like to learn how to write a paragraph, right? I'd like to learn how to write properly. I'd like to know, you know, where to, you know, the right kind of words to use or whatever. Other kids aren't ever going to ask that question, right?
I was just thinking about that. Yeah. My 9-year-old would never.
Yeah.
Would never ask.
And so then, you know, so maybe by the time they were 12 or so, I would say, you know, it's time that you started learning how to write a paragraph. And, you know, you know, we're going to use a format, and it's not difficult. And I could do I think I've mentioned this before, but often did like a co-op. So I'd have a few kids over and we would spend the afternoon writing. Right. And I found that was the thing, especially for the boys, that was the thing that got them over that hump, you know, of, because we made it fun, right? And they could write about whatever they wanted. And, you know, we just had a lot of fun with it. And then they always had time for play, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're really key to doing any kind of co-op, let them play, whether mm-hmm. that's board games or outside or whatever. So, you know, so the transition of language arts, of course, is going to be very slow. So I might say, okay, well, we're just going to do one paragraph a week. And that's where we're going to start. And I want to make sure they absolutely are solid in a paragraph before I move on to any kind of an essay, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, my daughter's been writing essays for a couple of years. You know, she's only 14. Some kids, I wouldn't start writing an essay till they were 15. I would want to know they had 2 or 3 years of, that they could write a paragraph just like that in their sleep, that, you know, they'd know exactly what to do. Here's their topic sentence. Here's their body sentences. Here's their supporting facts. Here's their, you know, their concluding sentence. And there's no, they don't have to struggle with that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's easy. So, yeah, so, you know, transition is very much a discussion with the child, and introducing them to what's available out there. Some conversation about, you know, expectations. If you want to go to college, these are some of the things you're going to need. You know, those college years are kind of the last, you know, 3-4 years of high school. They're prepping for college if they're going to go, or even, you know, like a trade school is going to want to see a pretty similar course of study to what there is at a regular high school. You know, so, you know, so that's all conversation. And I would be talking to my kids about that by the time they were, you know, 12, 13, 14. Okay. You know, this is what high school, needs to look like. If I got a lot of flack, I didn't. Okay. So, but you know, I always had it in my brain that if I got pushback or flack or a lack of readiness, and you have to be sensitive to what your child is, are they actually not ready to write an essay? Are they actually not ready to do algebra? You know, because sometimes it can be pushback and sometimes it can be just absolute lack of readiness. So, you know your child's temperament, you know, are they likely to be pushing back just because they're being lazy or whatever, mm-hmm. and being sensitive to those, you know, teen years that can be rocky, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, but if it's a conversation as opposed to a top-down decision, you know, what would you like to do for English? What would you like to do for social studies? You've got lots of choices. What science really attracts you? You know, we could do biology. We could do marine biology. We could do physical science. You know, you could specifically do, you know, all the microscopic world, you know, whatever. I'll work with you here, you know? So yeah, it's very much a conversation. It's hard to imagine that when your kids are small. It's kind of hard to imagine them participating, right? But it's so much better for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well then, so would your answer change at all if the question was, how would one make school a bit more cozy and natural if you didn't start from the beginning? You know, like let's say your kids are older and you're just now starting homeschooling. How do you kind of,
So your kids have been in school, presumably then. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, probably some of the same thing. Like if kids were pulled out of school, I would say one of the best things you can do is just start on the relationships, right? If the relationships are disordered, right, we need to take that first. So I think a lot of that comes with, you know what, guys, I think maybe in some families, you know, I think maybe we just need to take, you know, a few months. Mm-hmm. And kind of sort that out, right? Maybe we start a garden together. Maybe we just spend lots of time going on bike rides and hikes and reading together. You know, maybe just don't worry about the academics at this exact moment. Let's get things in harmony first. Mm-hmm. And then out of a place of harmony, let's decide what we're going to do, right? And, you know, a child might balk at that. No, I've got to finish high school. I've got to do, you know, because kids, if they're streamed in that school mentality, they can sometimes respond that way. Some kids can see that. Yeah, okay, that'd be really good for me. I need to shake all that off. Maybe their confidence is blown. Maybe they've had a bad experience. Who knows? But if your kids are given the freedom to decompress, mm-hmm. you know, from a school experience, then if that's what they need, then allowing them that, right? Some kids, if they're wiggy about not doing, you know, not doing the typical course of study, you know, you could say, okay, well, what do you think are the two most important subjects here? You know, could you, you know, maybe they say, well, English and math, or maybe they say science and math or something like that. Okay, well, let's have a look through some catalogs and, you know, maybe we go to a homeschool curriculum fair or something like that. you can have a look at some things, or we could ask around in our homeschool community. But, you know, why don't you get your hands on some things and you can decide, you know, what texts. My kids almost all decided their entire high school, you know, program, what they were going to do. They might seek my advice, but ultimately they knew that I would let them choose, right?
Okay.
So, yeah. But for some people, they need to just totally shake it off and not do, you know, what looks like formal school at all.
Yeah. Well, if I could just speak on that somewhat differently, my my oldest really, really struggled with math. Like, and he's very intelligent, and it wasn't that he was getting it wrong. It was he did not like sitting. He did not like the workbooks. It stressed him out. It made him angry. You know, he'd throw fits that he normally doesn't do. And so this year, you know, it's kind of a struggle because I want to bring him back into just liking learning and not being, you know, not having, I guess, PTSD about it.
Yeah.
So we're just keeping it really simple right now. This, I guess, semester, we're just doing Life of Fred so that he's still kind of massaging that math brain muscle, you know, without the, okay, now do the fact sheet and the worksheet that goes along with the lesson we just taught, you know? And so, you know, on the one hand, I feel like he's falling behind, but on the other hand, you know, hopefully if this new approach will help him to kind of catch up quickly, but by enjoying it.
Yeah. And, you know, catching up is something that we, you know, he is where he is, right? And, you know, wherever that is, you just want to make sure he's moving forward. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but it's easy to kind of feel like, you know, catching up or being at their grade level is the most important thing. And in reality, it's not. And there are many, many kids in school, maybe a third of the kids in school that are not at their grade level. Right. And, you know, and unfortunately they're being pushed ahead, you know, and without really understanding concepts. And so that absolutely, that mastery of getting this, understanding this, knowing this, focusing on this before you move on is going to be huge in his future. Right.
Right.
Do we have more questions?
Yeah. There's one final question.
Okay.
And it is kind of a, did you have any kids who didn't like dictation? And I'm going to further that and ask, what do you do if your kid does not like dictation?
Right. I would say no. None of my kids didn't like dictation because it was they knew that it was a cozy time with me. They knew it was short. They knew I wasn't going to push them. They, you know, so they knew that, you know, they might have, you know, some loved it, some did it uncomplainingly because, you know, it was the thing to do. Did they ever balk at it once in a while? Yeah. So let's address that first, the sort of occasional balking and then maybe just sort of an overall picture of not liking dictation. If they were balking at it for some reason, like this is too long, my hand hurts, it hurts to hold my pencil, you know, that kind of stuff. Then I would, again, it's a discussion, right? Okay, well, how much do you think is enough? Like, how much do you think is fair to ask you to do, right? And some kids do have a hard time holding their pencil. Some kids just don't want to be sitting, right? But I would say we had some bargaining points for sure that I was thinking, well, you know, it's a non-negotiable, but I'm willing to take a look at how much we do. We could just do 5 words, or we could just do 1 line, or we could set the timer for 2 minutes and you could just do dictation for 2 minutes. You know, what would work for you? Right. And the fact that they're part of that discussion is, you know, is really, really helpful when kids feel like they are, you know, kind of in control to some degree of what's going on in their life, right? And, you know, so I think that got us over a lot of humps, or not being wound up about, yeah, okay, sure. If you want to do it in purple marker, that I'm good with that. Right. You know, so I would take a look, I would ask some questions. I think if I was talking to this person asking the question in person, if they didn't like it, okay, is there a possibility that this child isn't ready? Right. You know, how old are they? If they're, younger than 7 or 8, it's possible that they're not ready. Some kids are ready at 3 or 4. Some kids, you know, it's 7 or 8 before they're really ready to sit down and, you know, not cry. I would also ask, is it sort of like a test, right? Mm-hmm. Like, are you approaching it like, okay, you now you have to spell the, now you have to spell, you know, man. Now, you know what I mean? If it was a test, that's going to completely, even if you're being nice about it, that's going to completely change the format in which we're working, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to think about, and, you know, we have to think about what the approach is and why it's meaningful and why it's effective, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, without having a little more background on that particular question, it'd be a bit hard to answer, but those would be the kind of questions I'd be asking the mom. It's like, is it possible they're not ready? Is it feeling like a test? Is it, is there some angst that is developed from doing it in the past? And maybe it was some sort of a negative experience. So mm-hmm. is there any way of shaking it up? Like, you know, can we sit down and do tangrams together? Or can we sit down and draw pictures together? Like, get in the habit of sitting down for 5 minutes together and doing a thing. Maybe that thing is, you know, having a tray of millet or rice or flour or something, and you're just drawing letters or tracing letters in it. Or maybe you have stamps and they like to stamp. And so, you know, you could get fancy little, you know, happy face stamps, and you just stamp on paper. You just, so that the goal then is just to just develop a little habit of sitting with me for 5 minutes. Right. And then you move into dictation as, you know, as they're ready. Most, you know, so whoever asked this question, if they're listening, if you want to, maybe give me a little more data. I could even answer the question just via email if you want, just a little more data about what's happening, right? Age of the child, you know, sort of previous, you know, background on that or whatever. That might be really helpful to sort of know what's going on and why it's not working. I you know, I mean, those are the experiences that I had. People come to me as like, oh, okay, I've been doing it for 20 minutes, you know, with my 6-year-old, and, you know, it was just way too long, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or their hand gets sore, and I'm just wondering if they're making up excuses. Well, it's possible that your child's saying their hand is sore, and they're using that as an excuse, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, let's work with that, right? You know, was your hand sore? Let me massage that for a minute. Okay, let's just finish that last word, and then let's go. But some conversation about how much we should do, the expectations of each day, is really, really helpful if they feel like they're participating in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know one thing I did pretty early on when we started dictation is I introduced a poem first, and we finished that. And then the next thing that we did was, it was dictation just all about them, you know, so we would, the first sentence was, my name is, you know, and they write their full name. And then my favorite book is, you know, because kids love talking about the things they love and about themselves. Yeah. And so it just, I gave them an opportunity to just have fun, you know. And my 6-year-old got really creative. He, one of his sentence was, my name is Henry. I have had 6 happy years.
I love it. Another thing too is allowing them to choose the sources, you know, is really good. And if they hate poetry, or they think they hate poetry, and they, you know, don't like literature, and they don't like nursery rhymes, and that, you know, there's lots of things, you know, that they're saying, I don't like that, I don't like that. Okay, what do you like? Well, I like tractors. I like Lego. I like, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's work with that. You know, let's find a quote from the Lego movie, or let's make up a story about Lego, but do it in a dictation fashion, right? That you're kind of feeding some of that information to them, you know, so you're teaching them the technical part of writing, spelling, punctuation, whatever comes up there, right? But often, you know, people who are reticent about dictation, you know, they might just prefer, okay, well, I'd like to do dictation from a science book. You know, there's some great Usborne books, or, you know, books about dinosaurs or whatever. And they might just prefer to do some topic that they really love.
Have you ever dictated a story that you just kind of come up with in your head, like some fictional little 3-sentence story?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that has happened. Not a lot, but definitely. Oh, another thing that I've done with my kids is, if they were showing any kind of, you know, reticence about dictation, I would, whatever book we were reading, I would read some juicy line from the next chapter that we hadn't read yet that would pique their interest. And so, and they would say, well, what happened? Well, let's find out. Let's find out. But I went with a kid who's, you know, hanging back, definitely, you know, keep it really short, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I notice my kids will balk about dictation if it's been long enough into the morning where they've kind of started developing a really specific game that they're playing, you know, like a dinosaur battle or something. And they're, oh, Mom, you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that can be a bargaining point too, right? Like if, in terms of, you know, if they're having fun, we want them to have fun together. It's something we want, you know. And so if you say, you know what, I can see you're having a lot of fun. How about this? What if we do dictation right after lunch before you start your game again? Right. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, find some other time, you know, that, you know, the next time you have to get up and go to the bathroom, why don't we just quickly spend 5 minutes doing dictation and then you can go right back to your game, you know, so use those things and encourage them in the positive thing that they're doing. Right. Cause it is great. You know, what do we want more than them getting along with their siblings?
Right. Right. I think we should probably have a full episode again on dictation, break it down a little more.
I know, it's such a cool topic. It'd be fun to really do some resources, like actually kind of do dictation back and forth in a sense. Right. And, you know, sort of talk about the things like only in an adult way. Okay. So like, you know, feed you the dictation and here's where, do you think this is a comma or a semicolon or whatever? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fun to, you know.
Well, and it's also, I have to say, it's very humbling because there are times when I'm looking, we've been using this book that's filled with some poems. And I didn't really learn poetry very well growing up. I think we talked about it once or twice in literature classes, but that was it. And so this book has a comma at the end of each stanza. And so it's really hard to explain to my kids because the next line starts with a capital letter. And so I've kind of gone back and forth like, okay, don't worry about capitalizing it because it actually doesn't make any sense to do that or leave out the comma or whatever. So it's kind of humbling because I'm realizing kind of some of the gaps in my own education that I need to kind of pick up to be able to educate them better.
Exactly. And, you know, learning along with them is such a great opportunity to do that on a really micro level, right? Micro scale.
Right.
Let's do that. Actually, the next time we have sort of a window, let's do a dictation episode and bring some resources. I think that would be really good to bring some, like, here's a great book and, you know, this is, this particular resource has been really helpful or whatever. I think that would be really really good for people. And also the resources that you need as the mom to, okay, well, why do we do, you know,
right
at the beginning of a new line of poetry?
I personally would love a resource on poetry.
I was going to mention one. There's a book called, it's an old school textbook actually. Okay. And it is, my kids have loved it. It's called The Poet's Eye.
Okay.
And it has several poems in it, but ultimately it talks about the story of poetry and why, sort of gives you some history about poetry and why human beings have always been drawn to poetry. I can't remember the, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. I can't remember the author's name right now, but it's a man. And so he also has this great language that he uses that really resonates, really resonated with my boys.
Okay.
And so it was one of those books that I would read for like one, you know, 5 minutes, one page, maybe two pages, before I started reading our novel.
Yeah.
You know, and so there was no expectation except we're going to read this story about poetry, right? And so he talks about rhythm and he talks about rhyme and he talks about epic poems and, you know, the purpose of poetry, right? So it's a fantastic book. I would highly
recommend. Love that.
Yeah, and it's cheap. I think I've bought a few copies of it over the years and, you know, like $5 on, you know, Alibris or Facebook, Amazon Marketplace or whatever.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the questions for tonight.
Okay. I am going to, so you can get a hold of us in all the usual places and we will, is there anything coming up? We have we have an interview in a couple of weeks, at the beginning of Advent. Mm-hmm. And our next show, after this show, our show will be on simplicity. I'm interviewing Kelly on Simplicity. So those things are coming up. And other than that, I guess you have Thanksgiving coming up. So
yes,
Thanksgiving to all our American listeners.
Thank you.
Okay, I will sign off.
All right. Bye.